So I'm curious, there are obviously a whole bunch of other targetable lesions in lung cancer, you know, BRAF, ROS1, there's a long list. How do they fit into this paradigm?
Yeah, these are tougher to sort out because we have a lot less data. You know, for instance, for BRAF mutant patients, we don't have as much information about the CNS efficacy of dabrafenib and trametinib. I would suspect it's okay, and I would often take that TKI-first approach for such a patient, but I'd be a little bit more anxious, and I'd be doing that MRI pretty quickly, 3-4 weeks after starting, so I made sure that things were headed in the right direction.
You know, when I think about the genomic alterations that will cause investigators to use targeted therapy up front, and we're not seeing randomized trials on that much anymore when people are just sort of flipping to it. I hear people saying BRAF. I hear people saying ROS1. Now people saying RET. Maybe exon 14, not sure. What are the lesions right now? Let's just, before we get to the brain part of it, what are the alterations where you usually use targeted therapy? Let's say the patient's not that symptomatic.
I would say that in the minimally symptomatic patient with an oncogene-driven cancer, I'm always going to try to start with a TKI. What data we have really supports the idea that, you know, even in some of these less common ones, say MET exon 14, if you look at the data, the patients who got these TKIs in the first line did better than those patients who got it in the second and third line. And so I think, you know, I'd like to use the TKI up front if we can, because frankly, the response rates are better. The response rates remain better than we see with chemotherapy. Now, we have to develop better drugs in these spaces, and I think MET exon 14 is the perfect example. You know, the initial data with crizotinib are certainly impressive. They certainly show that MET exon 14 is an oncogene-driven cancer, but it shows that, you know, the response rate is kind of lousy with crizotinib. It's in the 30-35% range, and we need to do better.
When we did the year in review series this past fall, when we got to the section with targeted therapy, where we got into new TKIs, you know, for exon 20 insertion, all this, you know, I felt like I was teaching a course in another language. I mean, I think in the space of 10 minutes, I went through a dozen new drugs that looked like really good drugs.
That's right. And some of them don't have names yet, but they're still exciting for these oncogene-driven cancers. And, you know, I think we all thought, you know, 15 years ago when EGFR came out, we thought that might just be a flash in the pan. And then we came up with ALK, and they thought, oh, something more to this. And then it's just sort of been like a drumbeat. Over the last 10 years, we've seen newer and newer targets, drugs that target those things. It's an exciting time for sure.
When I get to that part, now I warn the oncologist, so, you know, just like, get ready, here it comes, you know. So I'm going to say maybe one exception to your rule in terms of targeted therapy might be HER2.
I think you're right. That is a good example of an exception. We have very modest data on HER2. Best data we have is using the TDM1 antibody, atotrastuzumab emtansine, which is a drug often used in breast cancer, but there's some modest data to suggest its value in lung cancer. The response rates, again, are low, around 40%, but the confidence intervals are wide, given that we've only treated on study maybe 20 patients or less. So I think there's a lot more to learn there, and we clearly need better kinase inhibitors in that space. The TDM1, although it's valuable, isn't the drug we want to start with.